This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by You Build It. There's a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. Producer Tom, push that button.
What's trending? Happening now.
The King County Prosecutor's Office is rushing through five felony charges for the suspect in this week's Lake City shooting that left two people dead. Joining me in studio with more is Aaron Granillo, reporter with our sister station, Cairo Radio. So, Aaron, at this point, he did not actually make an appearance in court, but they're moving forward anyway. Take us through what's happening.
Yeah, he was supposed to show up in court today. A correctional officer told me that he just refused to come down. That is not uncommon. That happens all the time. Mm-hmm. But in court today, the judge said, yes, they are rushing those five charges against him, and there is no court date yet set for his next appearance.
What does it mean when we say they're rushing through the charges?
So what that means essentially is that it seems like they have enough evidence to charge him. Mm-hmm. Initial court appearance isn't necessary.
Okay, so what are they charging him with?
So he is charged with two counts of first-degree murder and then three counts of attempted first-degree murder. That's one more count than we thought he was going to be charged with. That's because the recently released police documents show that there was actually a fifth victim mm-hmm. involved in the shooting. She sped away after a bullet pierced her window. Jeez. She was not injured.
Okay, so that's the good news in all of this.
Right.
Obviously, we're now hearing from a lot of the victims and the witnesses mm-hmm. surrounding this, but we're now finding out a little bit more about the shooter, mm-hmm. including their theory, his side's theory as to why this might have happened.
So he claims he's a recovering alcoholic. Recovering now being in question now because mm-hmm. it appears that he got blackout drunk. That's what he told police. He went to a Fred Meyer. He says he bought rum, vodka, wine, and then played video games, played on his Xbox. He says that's what he does when he gets drunk, and he drinks to the point of being blackout drunk. That's the last thing he says he remembers before the shooting rampage and this carjacking.
What's interesting about that point is I remember the witnesses saying he, at one point, he just fell.
Mm.
He just fell on his face, and
yeah.
that gave them a little bit of an opportunity to try to get away. And I thought at the time it was weird, maybe he tripped, but maybe that goes to the point of he was, in fact, blackout drunk, and he was stumbling.
It's possible. And if you see the helicopter footage from some of the media, I mean, he is being dragged once he's taken out of that crashed red Prius that he stole. He's being dragged and cuffed, and he does seem bloodied and battered and a bit belligerent.
Do we know anything about his mental state?
That's unknown right now.
Because that's one of the questions. And again,
correct.
Certainly if you're someone who gets blackout drunk, if you're dealing with any sort of mental illness and you're taking medication for it, there could be, because
yeah.
this is still being described as completely random, correct?
Random and senseless is how police are describing it. And yeah, his mental state is unknown at this time.
Yeah, and for this to be random, that's why we're spending so much time
right.
trying to figure out why it is he did what he did. There's no evidence to indicate that anyone was targeted. He was
right.
having a bad day. We do know that he had some kind of interaction with a family member earlier that day. They are cooperating?
Yeah, the relative, it's a female relative. And according to a social media account, he was married a couple of years ago. So we don't know if his wife was in the house prior to the shooting. But that, again, that's all speculative right mm-hmm. now, but the relative, police say, is cooperating.
He's a local?
He is a Lake City resident, yep.
Okay.
And according to his social media accounts, staying in an apartment with his wife in the Lake City neighborhood.
He went to the University of Washington, 33 years old.
33, yep.
He worked in technology, right?
He was a contractor for Microsoft. This is according to his LinkedIn page.
Okay.
As a senior search engine marketing specialist and as a senior optimization specialist, according to that LinkedIn page.
So what's next?
What's next is we wait for the next court appearance, essentially. And the charges will be filed, and then the legal process will do what it does.
Okay, is he represented, or?
We don't know yet if he has an attorney.
Okay,
yeah.
But again, he chose not to appear,
not
but that's
appear.
Normal.
It's not uncommon.
Or it's not uncommon.
Yeah.
We've got the full report up at our sister website, mynorthwest.com. I've been joined in studio, Aaron Granillo from Cairo Radio. Thanks for stopping by.
You got it.
You're listening to The Jason Rand Show, 1-800-465-8770 for your text messages on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending on the campaign trail?
Oh, this is not a good look for Jay Inslee. Poor Jay Inslee. At some point, you do end up starting to feel bad. I'm almost there, mostly because I don't like Jay Inslee, and I like him making a big fool of himself on the national stage. I will say this. He was on Fox and Friends today. I got a whole bunch of tweets at Jason Rance on Twitter saying he embarrassed himself. I don't think it was that bad on Fox News. It was fine. I mean, maybe it's because I know what he's capable of that I wasn't all that thrown. But he's making this point of he's releasing 12 years of his tax returns, and he wants the president to do exactly the same.
Well, I look forward to talking about clean energy jobs, but I do want to make some news on Fox Friends. I always want to make news on your show first, and that is today I am challenging Donald Trump on his favorite show to release his tax returns like I did this morning, 12 years at jinsley.com. Look, I want to say it is time for him to come clean with the American people. He's got to show what he's been hiding, and Americans deserve that truth.
The only interesting part about what he just said, because no one's asking for his tax returns, no one cares about him, is that this is the first time he has gone away from exclusively talking about climate change. Now, of course, he went right back into it after this bit because he wanted to pull the stunt. But this is the only time that I've at least heard him not talk about climate change. He has decided to gamble on making that the singular issue to define his campaign. It's not working. The latest Quinnipiac poll, this is a legitimate poll, shows him not even garnering 1% of support. He hasn't even gotten to a full percentage point. This despite the fact he's been on media outlet after media outlet after media outlet. This despite the fact that he's spending more time out of the state of Washington, where he's elected to be governor, campaigning in Iowa, in New Hampshire, in New York. He spent more time out of this state than in it, and he's got nothing to show for it. Representative Ilhan Omar, I'm willing to bet, would poll better in Israel than the governor here in the United States. That's how bad it is. This is not good. And I'm not entirely sure I know whether or not he knows. I can't tell because he's delusional. He thinks he's going to be president when he, of course, is not. But do you think someone's in his ear saying, hey, look, don't abandon the whole idea about talking about climate change, but maybe talk about the economy a little bit, maybe talk about immigration a little bit. Now, of course, he's not going to be very good on those either, but at least it shows people who don't know who Jay Inslee is, which again is the vast majority of people, at least it shows them he's a well-rounded candidate, that he has interest beyond just the climate change story. Because let's be clear about something, the Green New Deal, it did not go well for the Democratic Party yet. Normal people look at the Green New Deal and say, okay, I mean, maybe I like some of it, but it's also really, really extreme. You're telling us no to air travel? Really? How? I've got a vacation in Hawaii. How am I going to get there? Am I going to canoe all the way out? People don't like this. People overwhelmingly don't like this. And on the topic of climate change, people may say they care deeply about it, but the truth is they don't care that much. Because the same people who say they care about the environment are the exact same people who are littering, who are wasting so many resources all the time, who will throw on that air conditioning when it gets a little bit too hot instead of opening a window. These are the people who love to talk about how much they care about the environment without actually having to back it up with action. Now, on the Green New Deal, Fox and Friends, they asked Inslee about it, and they specifically focused on how expensive it is. But of course, he deflects and said, well, it's really more expensive what we're doing right now.
Well, I'll tell you what's expensive. Expensive is Nebraska being flooded with $1.5 billion of loss. It's Paradise, California that I went and saw a town of 25,000 burn right to the foundations. It's my state where kids couldn't go outside because of the air quality last summer because of the forest fires. That's what's expensive. And what's expensive is losing jobs to the Chinese and the Germans. Look, we want these jobs in our country. We want to build wind turbines in our country, in Iowa. We want to build batteries for electric cars in Nevada. We want to build electric cars like we're doing today. Look, they're putting on 400 new jobs in Michigan. The same week, Donald Trump is so cowardly and pessimistic. This is a can-do nation. We put a man on the moon. We defeated fascism. And we can use our smarts to build a clean energy economy like we're doing right today.
I like that's my favorite part. We can use our smarts like we're doing right today.
Those are the smarts he wants us to use. We good and smart.
Wait a minute. I have to go back and listen to that part again. That's just funny, right? I'm not the only one. That's funny.
We defeated fascism, and we can use our smarts to build a clean energy economy like we're doing right today.
We done real good, smart, and educated.
God.
Kids can't go swimming.
Oh, God bless him. I mean, he's our governor, right? He's our doofus. He's a doof, but he's our doofus. Aw. You're listening to the Jason Rand Show, 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Send us your text, 1-800-465-8770. 15 minutes from now, part two of my interview with Howard Schultz. He is running for president, and he thinks conservatives should vote for him. Given part one of the interview, which we talked about guns, it might be a little bit difficult of a climb for him to earn your support, but we'll give him a shot. Right now, let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at the movies?
It's Friday. You know what that means? It means I get to talk movies thanks to our sponsor, Alpine Specialty Cleaning at alpineclean.com. The big weekend movie release is Hotel Mumbai. It is a graphic retelling of the 2008 terrorist attacks in Mumbai, where Islamic extremists went on a killing spree, killing over 150 people over the course of 3 days in a city that didn't have the police resources to effectively handle it. One of the spots the terrorists overtook was the Taj Hotel, a very upscale, very famous hotel in the city. There, dozens of people died. But the staff loyal to their guests stayed behind for the people who couldn't actually leave safely. Thanks to the heroism of the staff, many lives were actually saved.
I think we should try and gather whoever we can and take them to the Chambers Lounge and wait for the police to arrive.
Sir, Olga made it through the back exit. I can do the same.
Yes, but our guests can't. Not all of them.
Sir, 4 kids at home.
I know, Dilip. Nobody is forcing you to stay. So, whoever wants to try and make it out, this is your time.
I'm sorry, sir.
Don't apologize. Many of you have wives, parents, families at home. There is no shame in leaving.
I've been here 35 years. This is my home.
I'm staying too.
I'm with you, sir.
I'm with you, sir.
Me too.
Guest is God, sir.
Hotel Mumbai stars Dev Patel, Armie Hammer, and Jason Isaacs, and it truly earns its R rating. It shows the brutality of the terrorists who kill without any regard for life. And the graphic depiction in this movie is why the film works so well. It feels so incredibly real, which makes the heroism even more impactful on the viewer. Critics who didn't like the film claim it's exploitative, and I suppose it is. But how exactly do you retell a story where so many people died without exploiting it just a little bit so that it actually works as a movie? We are better off knowing about these heroes and the events depicted in this movie, even if it means the film has to take some narrative licenses. This is a really, really difficult movie to sit through because of the violence, but it's a thriller that's meant to make you uneasy. The film is rich in detail. It's wonderfully acted. And it is appropriately brutal. The one downside in this film is they don't really explore the motivation behind the terrorists. We know that they are being guided by someone else that doesn't live in Mumbai, actually lives in Pakistan. In fact, that terrorist, the mastermind behind this, is still free. But it does show you how they ended up doing what they did, even if it's not really about the why. It's about the response from the people in the hotel. I really enjoyed Hotel Mumbai. Yes, it is in fact entertaining, which may make you feel bad, but it's a means to tell a story that, again, I think we're better off knowing. Hotel Mumbai is out now. It's very much rated R, and I very much recommend it. What movie are you going to see this weekend? Text me, 1-800-465-8770, 1-800-465-8770. That's a Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline. The other film that's open this weekend is Dumbo, but it was directed by Tim Burton, who I don't like, so I didn't see it. Hotel Mumbai, go see it. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at home?
So doing the job that Sound Transit should be doing it, but not only just doing the job, but paying for it itself. The city of Kent just hired a firm for a redevelopment feasibility study. They're looking specifically at the Midway landfill, which is not far from Kent. And they're looking at that because that's where they would prefer to put a Sound Transit light rail vehicle maintenance and operations facility. We've been having this conversation because despite no one other than Sound Transit, no one wants this Sound Transit facility warehouse to be housed on top of the brand new Dick's Drive-In, the Lowe's, the Starbucks. No one wants it in this particular spot, which is a spot that the city of Kent has been working really, really hard to create into one of these places where you can live and work and get around town without a car. They've been trying to develop this area. They literally just put in a Dick's Drive-In back in December. And then all of a sudden, Sound Transit came in and said, even though we're not going to ask you what you guys think, City of Kent, we're going to consider putting one of these warehouse facilities right smack in the middle of that new development. And so people have been upset. The business owners have been upset. The Kent Reporter reports Kent will pay the company over $14,000 for the work, much less than the up to $100,000 contract amount approved in February by the City Council's Public Works Committee. Think about that for a moment. Sound Transit should be doing this work. Sound Transit should frankly say, okay, we've heard from the community, they don't want it here, we're going to go somewhere else. But instead, they're moving forward to the point where Kent has agreed to spend up to $100,000 so they can convince this organization, this agency, who has no regard for the people, convince them to go somewhere else. I love what the city of Kent is doing. It's sad that they're in that position where they need to do this. It's sad that the city of Kent has to take on this additional responsibility because Sound Transit doesn't give a lick about anything other than their own greedy agenda. And yet it is greedy to take this land from the city. It is absolutely greedy to take this land from the city, steal this land from the city. No one wants it there. If we had a Sound Transit that wasn't so corrupt, if we had a Sound Transit that we were able to actually appoint the Board of Governors to, we would have a much, much, much different scenario unfolding right now. Sound Transit wants power. They love the fact that they can act independent of having to listen to the will of the people. They don't care what you think. They think they know more than anybody else, which is weird because they can't actually get it together enough to deliver their projects on time or on budget. They know everything except how to do the one thing they're supposed to do on budget and on time. There is a push right now that actually has some potential. It's not going to happen this year, but it could happen next term, next legislative session. Because you've got a lot of Republicans, all of the Republicans, as far as I know, and quite a few Democrats who have stepped up and said, you know what? We should have an independently nominated board here. The people have a right to have a say. Now, Sound Transit pushes back and says, well, you already have a voice because we put on the board elected officials. No, that's not why people voted for the people who are on the board. I didn't vote for a mayor because I thought that mayor would then end up becoming a member of the Sound Transit Board. That's just not how it works. They are in this for the wrong reasons. They are in this to break up communities. They're wrong. And they're ignoring the people. And at some point, we're going to have to fight back a little bit harder than sending some angry tweets and showing up to a meeting. At some point, we have to be even more engaged, calling our state lawmakers, telling them they have to push this bill so that we can actually vote to put people on the board. We're going to have to do a lot more than show up to one meeting. This is just absolutely outrageous. Now, if you think I'm outraged, listen to the Saul Spady Show. Saul, of course, has a family connection. His grandfather started Dick's Drive-In, but he's been all over this story, and kudos to him for some of the great reporting he's doing on it. Saul Spady Show is heard weekday mornings from 6 to 9 right here on KTTH. If you don't have the app, that's a mistake. You should probably download the app. Text the keyword app, APP, to the number 1-800-465-8770. Not only can you stream the show and the station wherever it is you want to listen, but you can also get all the podcasts and you can catch up on all the blogs that me and Saul and Michael Medved write every single day. Text the keyword app to 1-800-465-8770. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, Howard Schultz. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. We are live in the Online Trading Academy studio. Thank you so much for tuning in and telling all your friends about the show. I hope everyone is having a relatively stress-free Friday commute, excited for the weekend, thinking about politics. Because no matter where you turn, you've got some candidate in your face telling you why they have what it takes to not only defeat President Trump, but become a successful president of the United States. Now, we've heard, of course, all day from Jay Inslee. He, of course, is still talking specifically about climate change, but it's not really moving the needle. Howard Schultz is running for president. And he's running for president without actually saying he's running for president. But it's clear from all the things that he's saying and the way that he's saying it, he is eyeing a campaign. And right now he's trying to introduce his brand to the American people. His brand, as he is pursuing it, is about being a centrist, about being an independent, a true independent. He has some conservative beliefs. He has some liberal beliefs. And really what we need in this country right now is someone who is not an extremist. Now, on the Democratic side, they clearly are leaning into some of the fringe beliefs and fringe candidates. The Elizabeth Warrens, the Bernie Sanders. They're leaning into that. The left or the right, we've got Donald Trump. And he's going to be a strong candidate because the economy is going really, really well. And from a conservative perspective, we're certainly getting the Supreme Court justices that we've wanted. And we're certainly getting the federal judges that we've wanted. But Howard Schultz, he thinks he can win over conservative voters. Now, we played part one of my interview today with Howard Schultz at 3:30. The full interview is available online. I'll tell you how to get it all in one file after we hear from part two of the Howard Schultz interview. But now we're going to get into a whole host of different issues, including homelessness. But really, why should a conservative vote for Howard Schultz? Here's part two of my interview.
When we look at major American cities, and of course we'll start with Seattle, homelessness and opioid crisis is to epidemic levels. What for you is the role of the federal government in trying to tackle this issue without maybe overstepping and getting involved too much on the local level?
Well, I think the federal government has a moral obligation to recognize we clearly have an opioid crisis in America. That is an epidemic that is sweeping across the country. Now, there are many reasons for this. We have an epidemic of loneliness and isolation. We clearly have abuses of pharma and pharmaceutical companies, of doctors in terms of prescribing these drugs. This problem has to be tackled on a comprehensive way, and the federal government has a big role to play. And this is not something that's going to be solved by ignoring it or thinking it's going to go away. In fact, it's getting much, much worse. The homelessness problem, the mental health crisis in America, the opioid crisis, these are all related to the rise of social issues in the country that the federal government needs to be engaged in. And that's the responsibility. And what this comes down to, I think, in all your questions thus far, it's about leadership. Mm-hmm. And it's about truthfulness. And it's about honesty with the American people. And, you know, what's going on, there's a lot of false promises. And unfortunately, a lot of the false promises are steeped in the ideology of both parties' unwillingness to come together to do the work for the American people.
So I think some people have overstated your impact on the Democratic Party in a primary system. Okay. It sort of depends, I suppose, on who ends up becoming the nominee from the Democratic Party. If it's one of the more fringe voices, I think you have a clear shot. And you can make the argument to the Democrats saying, okay, I'm more of a moderate Democrat. I'm clearly leaning towards the left. Vote for me, not for an Elizabeth Warren or someone like that. But what's the argument to conservatives? Because there are conservatives like me who was initially uncomfortable with President Trump. And I didn't vote for President Trump. But I do like what he's doing, for example, on the justice level, whether we're talking about federal judges or Supreme Court judges. That's what I think is important to me and for a lot of conservatives. So what's the argument that a conservative should vote for you?
Well, first off, I think you just mischaracterized me a bit. I want to just get to that as a left-leaning.
You're not left-leaning?
Democrat. No, I'm a centrist. Everything I'm talking about is through the prism of recognizing that both parties are too extreme on the left and the right, and there's a need for a common sense approach to all of this. So the first answer to your question with regard to my position as a conservative or conservative leaning is that for a decade now, I have been a public, large, loud, vocal voice of the concerns I have about the national debt and the deficit. Now, I always believed that Republicans had a strong view with regard to the economic issues of preserving the integrity of the fiduciary responsibility of our system.
They used to.
Well, they used to only because President Obama was in office for 8 years, and now when President Trump is in office, it doesn't seem to matter. But taking that aside, we're $22 trillion of debt, and we're adding $1 trillion a year, $500 billion a year in interest. So not as a conservative or a left-leaning Democrat, as an American. And if I ran for president, I would run as an American. I'm raising my hand and saying, listen, we cannot allow this debt to continue for a whole host of reasons, not the least of which is the immorality of it, because of putting that level of debt on the backs of our children and grandchildren and our inability to invest in the future of the country, not the least of which is this is a national security issue.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't think of another issue that I could bring up that I feel so strongly about that in the past has been a Republican issue. I don't see it as a Republican or Democrat issue anymore. I see it as an American concern issue we have to solve. In terms of my positions overall, I'm leaning towards what the American people believe is in their best interest. And what's in their best interest is a healthcare system that works for them. The Republicans continuously now for 9 consecutive years have said they want to eradicate the Affordable Care Act. Okay, that's a interesting position. What's your alternative solution?
Mm-hmm.
There hasn't been one. On the other side, the Democrats now want free Medicare for all. Interesting idea, but that also means 180 million people who currently get their health care from the employer are off the employers. The disruption would be hard to even imagine, not the least of which is a $30 trillion number. So both of them are incorrect. I want to take a centrist approach to solving health care, and I believe I have an idea about that and some principles that would work, and that is fixing the Affordable Care Act so we get the premiums down and we have coverage for every American. You asked me about guns. I support the Second Amendment. It's a Republican issue, I believe. But I believe that
Republicans generally would not say to ban so-called weapons of war if we're talking about like an AR-15.
But I'm taking a centrist position. The centrist position is the American people want a common sense solution to this problem. 40,000 people last year were killed as a result of gun violence. You can debate one way or another how or why they were killed. I don't want to do anything that would disrupt the ability for a sportsman or a hunter or people to bear arms because of the protection under the Second Amendment. I believe that. But I also believe that as society has evolved, we have an issue that we need to address. And our tax policy. I believe the wealthy should be paying more in taxes. I think we need to do everything we can as a country to narrow the gap of inequality, that the greatness of America and the American promise will not be sustainable if it's only available to a few and not for everyone. And what we haven't talked about is our standing in the world today, and that is our national defense, our standing in the world, our relationship with our allies, the fact that Russia is an enemy of this country, that this president has turned a blind eye in dealing with Russia the way we should be. China is not an enemy of the United States, but a fierce competitor. Their goal in life is to displace us as the number one economic power. His approach to how we're dealing with them, to me, is just not something that I would even consider. I think the trade and tariff war has hurt every American consumer, certainly has hurt every farmer, everyone in the steel industry. And we're nowhere with North Korea, and it's been a charade, a sham. And we need China's help in co-authoring a strategy for North Korea. So everything I'm talking about, every issue, is steeped in two things. One is what is in the interest of the American people, and also speaking about it in terms of true, authentic, honesty, civility, and leadership. And the last thing I'd say is that, do you have children?
I don't.
Okay, so if you have a child in this country today, and you're thinking about the future of your children and your grandchildren, and all the things that we've just talked about, just think about one thing, and that is the character, the morality, the lack of civility, the lack of grace of this president. And does anyone in America want to model their behavior of their children based on how this person, who sets the tone and the character of our country? And the answer is no. And so that alone, to me, disqualifies him to be the next president of the United States in 2020.
So that was my interview with Howard Schultz. If you miss part one of the interview when we talked about guns and immigration, please text the keyword podcast to 1-800-465-8770, and I will send you a link to the podcast where you can subscribe and listen to the full 20-minute interview with Howard Schultz. Text the keyword podcast to 1-800-465-8770, and I'll send you a link. And while you're at it, why don't you tell me, have you changed your mind? Are you a conservative who now looks at Howard Schultz and says, he actually might get my vote? Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. We are live in the Online Trading Academy studio on this Friday night. If you guys are looking for anything to do tomorrow night, I will be hosting an event for the Seattle Jewish Film Festival. I will be hosting a Q&A with the director of a film, Budapest Noir. Looks really, really good. I'm super excited. For more information, SeattleJewishFilmFestival.com, and you can purchase tickets. And if you want to hang out with me, that would be a blast. Couple of points. I am seeing a lot of interesting text messages from folks on the Howard Schultz interview. Because you've got someone who clearly is in a position where he needs to get some of the president's base, or really the conservative movement, to go with him. Howard Schultz needs not just the Democrats to take a shot on him. He's going to need to bring over some of the Republicans as well. And so clearly he's trying to make a pitch for the Republicans who were uncomfortable with Trump as a candidate, but decided to hold their nose because they would never want to vote. We would never want to vote for Hillary Clinton. So he's trying to go after them. And I think he disqualifies himself from consideration from a lot of conservatives with his stance on guns. We did part one of the gun control conversation at 3:30. So if you have not listened to the entire 20-minute interview with Howard Schultz, text the keyword podcast. Only the keyword podcast, nothing else, just podcast, to 1-800-465-8770. Because we've got some folks who said, you know what, I'm going to give him a shot. He's the real deal. Some people say, no, there's no way in the world I'm going to vote for Howard Schultz. I'm Team Trump all the way. Text podcast to 1-800-465-8770. Meanwhile, a follow-up, Ben McDonald, the reporter over at Campus Reform, let me know of a couple quick corrections to the interview. It turns out that the professor who believes that Moana is a story about rape and not necessarily about what we thought it was, this Disney film, she does not raise her children as non-binary. That statement was incorrect. And that there weren't 24 people, there might have been something like 42 who showed up, 42 dopes who decided to show up and hang out with she's a doctor, Professor Danielle Lane over at Gonzaga. But it did sound like, don't you wish, I vote, Producer Tom's a little bit closer to the college age than I am, not by that much.
Jason.
Okay, shut up. I'm 37 years old. We certainly had weird things happening on college campus. Nothing like this. I don't quite remember things like, is Moana really about rape? Come join us and watch the movie and have a conversation.
No!
I just don't remember that. Was that happening on your campus?
No, we had a lot of...
Was it this bad?
Shortly after Trump got elected, there were a lot of rallies on our main mall area, you know, and people voicing their concerns, and we had a lot of them, but I don't quite remember anything
I feel like I missed out. Not because I think there's any merit to any of these conversations. This is a woke white woman professor who wants to pretend she knows what the true meaning of Moana, a Disney film, is about. It's not because I think there's any merit to any of her positions. I just kind of feel like it'd be fun to start a lot of trouble in a community like that. In a lot of ways, I look at what's happening at the University of Washington with the college Republicans there, and I was like, man, that just seems kind of fun to be like the one kid out of every 4,000 who happens to be a conservative. So there's like 13 of you guys there. Like, it feels like that would be fun. One, because I'm someone who naturally likes to be the odd man out politically speaking. I like that. I like that I'm the only person in a group of sports people. I'm the only one who likes soccer. Like, I just like being that person. And I like to needle a little bit, and I like to cause a little bit of problems, a little bit of trouble, only because when I say cause problems, I mean get you to think about things in a slightly different way. And I feel like I would really thrive on a college campus today. Because I was that person when I went to college myself back in 2000 to 2004. I went to Occidental College. I was that conservative kid starting in my sophomore year. And because I was just surrounded by a whole bunch of liberal indoctrination, I ended up actually becoming way more conservative. By my senior year, I was a hardcore conservative because of what I was being told by my professors. And if I just wish we had more of these events. Just something that I can go to and just pose a question. Because the thing is, there are two types of people who go to events like these. The people who already go in thinking the fringe beliefs, and then the people who would be like me, which is only going there to show an alternative opinion.
You know what's funny is there are very few people like that in colleges.
Brilliant.
Like at WSU.
Witty.
There was...
Handsome.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of those.
Single.
But not the conservative type. By the way, this show wasn't Matchmaker. There weren't that many people there. I was one of the very few conservatives in my class. Everyone thought the same. No one ever spoke out. And it was incredible. I remember in class one time, my professor, right after Trump got elected, started pondering with us if we were going to get rid of the Electoral College. She was like, yeah, I wonder if we're going to be looking at that soon.
You know, what's kind of interesting on that, and I'll jump off at that point, Howard Schultz could be responsible for us getting rid of the Electoral College, or at least treating it in a slightly different way. Because I was thinking about this. I was talking with Mike Salk over at 710 ESPN Seattle, a colleague of mine here in the building. And I was like, I asked him what he thought about Howard Schultz. And, you know, he agreed it's going to be very difficult, if not impossible, for him to become president. And I said, OK, well, go with this fantasy land for a second. You've got Howard Schultz, who has the money to run for president. He's a very wealthy man. He's got relatively good name recognition. And he does have a brand that's developing that I think is relatively strong, that he is this down-the-middle centrist candidate in a country that he believes is you know, desperate for the person who isn't a fringe and isn't too far to either side. Okay. All he has to do is really focus his campaign in potentially two or three states, if he can win those two or three states, and deny Trump or whoever the Democratic nominee is going to be, deny them the Electoral College numbers that they need, 70, right? So if he gets in there, let's say crazy world, I'm going with it. He wins California, he wins Texas, and he wins Florida. Let's just throw that out there. Well, all of a sudden, depending on how all the other things shake out, we could have a situation where the House of Representatives ends up determining who the president is. And maybe he goes up and he makes the case to a divided House of Representatives that, you know what, this shows you that the fringe isn't going to work. Vote, put me in office. I agree to one term. I will be the centrist candidate. End of story. That's kind of, it's not going to happen, but it's interesting to think about things and the possibility of them happening and see how we would all react. Because it's weird. As a talk show host, I feel like I would enjoy that. Even though I want a Republican in the White House, as a talk show host, that's an incredibly historic moment, and I would get to talk about it.
Hey, definitely be in our What's Trending segment. Segment.
It
one.
Might even lead, but would it be, wait, what? Or would you can't make this up?
Or let's get political. It could be that as well.
That's easy.
Yeah. No, but he's going to try to appeal to morality, and he's going to get those people who just can't find themselves voting for Trump. That's who he's probably going to go after.
It's a smart position if on the big conservative issues you happen to agree with them, right? I'm fine with the moral argument if you want to make it. But if you're going to tell me you're not going to put up a Supreme Court justice unless you're confident they can get two-thirds support in Senate, well, then you're not going to be putting up a conservative justice, and that's what I want. If you're telling me that you think we still currently have weapons of war and you consider an AR-15 a semi-automatic weapon of war, bring that to the war field. You'll really quickly realize it's not a weapon of war. If you're calling for that to be banned or even going in that general direction, then no, I don't think you're really a strong supporter of the Second Amendment, something I care about. So I don't know if the morality play is enough for Howard Schultz to win over the conservatives or any Republicans on the fence. And if he does, he's probably winning them over. If he wins Washington conservatives, okay, that doesn't hurt the Democrats at all, because, or nor does it hurt President Trump, because Trump isn't winning Washington State. We're way too blue. There's a lot of questions that I have, and we'll spend some of next week, and really this weekend, trying to answer them. If you want to join the conversation online, Facebook.com/Jason Rant Show, and text the keyword podcast to 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link to my full interview with Howard Schultz. Up next, Ben Shapiro.